This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk. @WKAR.org. And we've got a guest on today. We're going to be talking with our good friend Jack Ebling, and we'll talk most of the hour about many sports going on. As many of you know, Michigan State is in first place by a half game over Michigan in second place right now. It's a tough race. It's going to be a tough race for the whole season, let's face it. There are really about 8 good teams in the Big Ten this year. One of the rare years where you have so many teams vying for the top spot. So, Jack, how you doing, and how do you see this first place race going for the rest of the season?
I'm doing fine, Earl, and I guess you have talked about next week. Have you told people about next week yet?
A little bit. I haven't told them enough yet.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got some surprises for listeners of Earl Robinson's show next week on WKAR. But you bring up a very good point about the Big Ten. And, you know, when you think that Michigan is ranked number 2 in the country,
yes,
in one of the polls, but it's number 3 in the Big Ten today, that's kind of unusual. But I think that Wolverines, certainly with the game against Purdue tonight, can climb within a half game of Michigan State. And then it'll be up to the Spartans to see what they can do Sunday at Indiana. You look at the depth of this league, Earl, and last night you get Northwestern beating Minnesota. A lot of upsets last night, actually. You saw Creighton went down, and who could have believed what happened to Duke?
Yeah, it's just been one of those years, hasn't it?
It has, and when you think about going back to late November and Michigan State going down to Coral Gables, losing to the Hurricanes rather by 8 points, you certainly didn't know at that point how good that loss was. Actually, Miami turned out to be a very good team that is number 1 in the ACC right now. And anytime you beat Duke by 27 points, you know, that happens about once every 20 years. So maybe Michigan State's loss down there wasn't quite as bad as some people thought.
Yeah. Well, Jack, I might as well let you tell the folks what's going to be happening next week.
Well, I think a lot of people know that you are maybe on your farewell tour here on WKAR after 4 decades of distinguished service, and you are stepping down from your position February 1st. And so you're going to have some special guests next week, and it's going to be Earl Robinson week.
Well, I, if you want to call it that, I guess you can call it that. We'll have a lot of guests on, that's for sure, and we'll just do a lot of talking, reminiscing, and things like that. So it should be a lot of fun.
Do you remember the first show you did? I think Gus Kanakis was your guest.
Yes, he was. Gus was the first guest we had on it. Jim and I had Gus Kanakis on as our very first guest, and of course, Gus was the first guest, but he also was a very good friend of the coaches at that time. And so,
right.
Gus was like really a no-brainer for us getting Gus on, because he knew everything and knew so much about basketball. So that was an easy guess.
You know, it's funny, looking at some of the photos going way back, and of course we got a chance to reminisce a little bit at Jim Adams' memorial service, his funeral, and the visitation before that. But some of the shots with you and Jim having Irvin on as a guest just after he'd gone to the Lakers, and then the shots of you with Gus and some of the coaches that had come before, really is a trip down memory lane.
Yeah, it is. A lot of trips down memory lane. Maybe too many trips down memory lane.
That lane's getting worn out.
Yeah, it is. That's for sure. Hey, we talked about, mentioned in the opening of how Delmon Young's going to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, you know, you sort of look at that as strange. I mean, he's got a chance to gain a lot of money back. I mean, he's only signing for $750,000 in today's market. That's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
So he has to. He has a chance to make up a lot of money.
Well, he's got that weight clause too.
Yeah.
He's going to get a bonus if he stays under a certain weight. And you know, Delmon Young had some big hits for the Tigers, but he was also a load in terms of maybe handling him. And, you know, he had the outburst in New York. I don't think that helped his case much. And so it'll be interesting to see. The Tigers also are going to be running into Ryan Rayburn a few times now that he's a Cleveland Indian. And fans couldn't wait to get rid of him. But
yep.
Sometimes it's, Earl, it's be careful what you wish for. The Tigers couldn't wait to get rid of Brandon Inge. At least their fans couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I remember him having a couple of big hits last year that beat the Tigers. So, you know, you have to be careful sometimes with that. But Delmon Young with the Phillies, we'll see how he does in the National League.
Yeah, we will. It'll be interesting to watch. But yeah, he's going to get another chance. And that's all you can, when you're a ball player, that's all you can ask for when you get cut or someone release you. That's the only thing you can ask for is another chance, a chance to prove that they were that team that cut you was wrong.
Yeah, and you know, in pro sports, Earl, if you can hit the ball or you can get anybody out, you're going to get lots of chances.
Yes.
And if your own team sours on you or gets tired of you, somebody else will be there to pick you up. And be interesting to see how both of those guys do in new surroundings.
Oh, that's for sure. We see that so much in baseball, and we know that it just takes a lot out of a guy. Well, let me see. We got someone on the line, so let's go to the phones. Hello, you're on the air with us. Hello, you're on the air?
Hello?
Yeah, hello, you're on the air with us.
Earl?
Yep.
Hey, got a question.
Okay.
Okay, we're talking about NBA, high school, basketball, how we were arguing about how many steps you could take. And, you know, in college and high school and Pee Wee, it's all 1.5 step, right?
Yep.
Okay. In the NBA, we looked it up online and said you could take 2.5, which I kind of, that's why I was arguing that I don't watch the NBA because they let them take steps. And sometimes 3.5 and 4.5 and 5.5. You've seen that, right?
Yep.
Okay, I did acknowledge that you could take 2.5 steps in the NBA because we just looked it up, versus high school and college. Okay, if these people are the best players on the planet, why would they up it to 2.5 instead of like it's supposed to be?
Because, because they, even though you say 2.5, it was never written down that it has to be 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
See, it never was. So 2.5, it looks good when it's 2.5 steps.
I don't know. Yeah.
You know,
but if these people are the best players on earth, why would they have to change the rules to make it look better so they can dunk more and make it look more spectacular?
And that helps. Sure, that helps. You take another step, you get a little boost, and you know that makes it look better for everybody that's involved, that's running the floor. So that makes it looks a lot better for them. So from that standpoint, it's good for them, for players to get that extra step there, and it helps them to move better and move quicker, which it does. They move a lot quicker.
That's the reason they changed it for more spectacular plays?
I think it did, but I'm not sure that they did it for more spectacular plays. It came out that way, but I'm not sure they did that. That's why they did it.
Are you saying it's written in the rule book that it's 2.5 steps?
Yeah, for NBA. We just looked it up online, and it says you can take 2.5 in the NBA.
Oh.
What do you call it? Euro? It's called a Euro something, which they must do over in Europe, I guess. But I guess I understand. To me, a rule's a rule. And that's the reason I kind of quit watching the NBA years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because, if you give them 2.5, man, I'm telling you, those guys are going to – you've seen Jordan. You see Jordan take 3 or 4. Am I right? You don't call it.
Yeah, that's true.
And LeBron and all the big names.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, a rule is a rule. I don't care who it is, who's up, what it should be called. Don't you agree?
Well,
murder.
Well, you see, that's the thing about rules. Rules can always be changed. They can always be changed. There's nothing that says the rule has to stay the same all the time. It can always be changed.
We know that the NBA loves offense. Every league loves scoring. So they want to have as many exciting plays as they can. But I've never seen anybody take four steps.
Oh, they let them get away with that. Three and a half, four.
I've never seen that.
Well, if you watch them close, they let them get away with murder, a lot of them. In the NBA, not college and high school. They call it. You know, they call it. And that's one of the reasons I kind of quit watching.
Well, we got another caller to go to. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hello, you're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, Jack. Good afternoon, Earl.
Hey, good afternoon. Hey. How you doing?
Two very diverse points I'd like to bring up. First and foremost, and I know it includes the national champion and tremendous success, but I think so far this season, and I, as a Michigan State fan and alumnus, I am proud of what this team has done, but I think this might be Coach Izzo's, and it's not a complete season yet, fine season. I really, when I see this team, and man, it's sometimes very difficult to watch. I see where they're sitting. But if this team were to somehow end up in the top 10 or maybe even win the Big Ten, I think this might be Coach Izzo's finest season. And it would rank amongst many very good ones. I'm not saying it would be maybe an easy choice. But when I really look at what this team has accomplished so far, I have a difficult time seeing how they've done it. I really do. But secondly, and more importantly, I don't know if you two gentlemen ever had a chance to meet Stan Musial. I know he passed away last week. You know, in a different market, I didn't know if by chance he'd ever had a chance to meet him at an All-Star game or a World Series appearance. But really, do you think fans nowadays really appreciate what an incredible baseball player and man Stan Musial was? I know it was a different time. I know it was a time when maybe the press kept some of the things under wraps, you know, that they do nowadays. There wasn't an internet. But, I mean, again, had a man to have passed at 92, to have lived the life that he had, and to literally be beloved by everyone, to have never heard a bad word. And, you know, I know what Joe DiMaggio and the old Simon and Garfunkel song, you know, Where Have You Gone? But since we have learned that maybe Joe DiMaggio wasn't the true American hero. But, again, do you think people nowadays can really understand and appreciate what he meant to his community and what he meant to baseball? And do you ever see a time when, you know, that will be allowed to happen? I mean, I guess nowadays we all want to know about the foibles and the things that they do, and we want to tear it. We build them up just so we can tear them down. But did either one of you guys ever get to meet Stan Musial? And, again, just expound at really what a baseball legend that man was. Because I just think, I find it kind of a little bit unsettling that when you talk to even people into their 40s, you know, which is my age, and you bring up Stan Musial, and they just kind of, I mean, they've heard it.
Yeah,
they maybe know that he's a Hall of Famer, but they just get out a baseball encyclopedia and just see what kind of ball player Stan Musial was. Because when it comes to hitting, he's got to be in the top 10 of all time. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Did you ever watch him, Jack? Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
I never got a chance to meet Stan Musial, but I know a lot of people who have. John Lewandowski worked for the Cardinals, and I've heard so many great stories about Stan Musial. Danny Littweiler, former Michigan State baseball coach, was a very good friend of Stan's. And the kind of man he was, they called him Stan the Man for a good reason. He was more than a great hitter. And if you look at what he did as a major league player, it's right at the top of the top. I mean, he's the last player to get 175 triples. He's second all-time in extra base hits. He was really the face of the St. Louis Cardinals, one of the most popular franchises in America for about 20 years. And you look at his career batting average in the 330s and the RBIs, the way he played the game, I think he was a true professional. So I don't know anyone who's ever had a bad word to say about Stan Musial. I know that he is revered in St. Louis, the statue outside the stadium. I mean, you think about the way Al Kaline is perceived in Detroit. Well, you can multiply that by about three. And you have Stan Musial in St. Louis. He also asked a question about Tom Izzo, I think, didn't he, at the beginning of
at the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he mentioned that this might be Tom's best coaching job. As he said, there's a lot of basketball to be played. We don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. But if Michigan State could win the Big Ten championship this year, it would have to rank right up there. You have to look at the fact that this team now at 11 in the polls is as high as it's been all year. Mm-hmm. And to do that in a league as competitive as the Big Ten is this year would rank with anything he's ever done. I always said that the best coaching jobs were the first couple years, the first year when he didn't have a lot and he got to 9-9 in the Big Ten, right, and made the NIT. And then the second year they were 17-12 and again won a game in the NIT. Those were tremendous coaching jobs considering the players. Then when he started to get a little bit better talent, the win totals went up. But I think that the job Michigan State has done this year, you know, they've won the close games. And we saw in football how important that is. If you win or lose a couple of close ones, it changes everything. And they've been able to pull together, Earl. Mm-hmm. They've been able to win the games. And you know, on one hand, some of it is just good fortune. They've been able to take advantage of that. But they've played three teams in Nebraska, Iowa, and then again at Wisconsin that have had players out of the lineup, players who could have made a difference in a one-possession game. But Michigan State's been good enough and cohesive enough to make the plays down the stretch. Free-throw shooting, for the most part, hasn't been good. But look what they've done in the last 3 minutes of games. They've hit almost every shot they've taken.
Yeah, they've done a great job in these games. You know, you can always say, yeah, they made the shots, but you know, sometimes, you know, that's the thing with shooting. Sometimes, like we were talking about last night, sometimes you're lucky with the shots you make,
right,
and sometimes they don't go in. But
right,
you know, but it's when they go in, you know, it makes you look good all the time.
You know, that's a great point. And when you think about the other night, Wisconsin was 7 for 18 at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's nothing that Michigan State did defensively to make them 7 for 18. They're not a good free throw shooting team. In fact, they were last in the Big Ten. But if they had shot 56% at the line, well, they would have had enough points. Of course, you don't know how it would have played out in different situations. Maybe Michigan State would have scored on its last possession. But certainly it would have given Wisconsin a much better chance to win that game. And you're right. I mean, you can have a shot that looks like it's perfect and just lips out. Trey Burke,
yep,
had one of those at Ohio State, or Michigan would be undefeated.
Mm-hmm. So true, so true. Well, the time right now is 23 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Decorated veteran, longtime senator, former presidential candidate, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, and occasional diplomatic troubleshooter, John Kerry's now nominated to be Secretary of State.
In a sense, John's entire life has prepared him for this role.
I'm Neil Conan. Do different times call for different kinds of diplomacy? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good to have you with us today. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Mostly sunny with a high today in the upper teens. Tonight's low in the single digits, mostly cloudy with a good chance of overnight snow. 1 to 3 inches of snow Friday, the high 21, and a chance of flurries with a high of 24 Saturday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, let's go to our next guest on the line. We've got Dennis on the line. And Dennis, let's talk a little boxing. That'll keep Jack quiet for a while.
And before we start boxing, I want to reminisce with you because we've had this conversation, I think, in the 80s, the 90s, the noughts, and now we're going to talk about it in the teens.
Okay.
What the hell is a half step? How do you take half a step? I played, coached, and ref basketball. Yeah, I took the MHSAA test, passed it even, and ref for a while until I found out I didn't have a temperament. And I don't remember ever reading about a half step. I don't know how physiologically you can take half a step. I don't know what that means. So for this guy to come on the show and tell us that he's gone on the NBA website and read about half a step, I just find that a little dubious, okay?
Okay.
I'm not going for that. If you don't like the NBA, just say you don't like the NBA. Don't blame it on half step, okay?
Yeah, that's a good reason.
And Earl, one more thing. For Kirk to be surprised that State's got a good team this year, why should he be? They got Dawson was a five-star coming out of high school. Wayne was a five-star coming out of high school. Gary Ayers was a five-star coming out of high school. I think Appling was Mr. Basketball. Valentine, two state championships. All they got all kind of talent, Earl, to put it all together. I'm not surprised State's playing well.
Yeah, no, they are playing well, and it's been a good, solid team. I don't think they're as good as maybe some of the other teams, but they're a good, solid team, and, you know, you can't slip and slide on them because they will beat you because they're a good team.
Yeah, they're improving, and they may not be as good as they're going to be. They may have started the year not playing as well as you'd like them to, but I don't think anyone in the Big Ten sees State coming to town and say, oh, easy night.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's his old team. They're going to be right in the thick of it at the end of the season, and if they win the state and win the Big Ten championship, who would be surprised?
Yep.
So, anyway, got that off my chest. They're about the half step. Let's talk boxing.
Okay.
Hey, Dennis, I got a question for you. You know, you talk about boxing, and you know more about boxing than most people that I've ever met. But in terms of some of the changes in the sport, do you think the real problem is judging?
It's a big problem. It's a big problem. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is the fact that judges are easily corrupted. And, you know, that goes with everything in our society. But, you know, nowadays, Jack, I'm seeing some decisions by judges that I just can't understand. They're a mystery to me. Either they're corrupted or they're just incompetent to beat the band. It's just... sometimes you just can't understand what fight these guys are seeing.
Well, Earl, as a judge, do you have meetings with other judges? Do they give you training for that? Do you go and do things that make for better judging, or is everyone just kind of left up to their own?
I know you have judging seminars, and you know everybody goes through a seminar, at least one seminar for sure, and then basically everyone makes their own decision. I mean, a judge is what the people do it. They make their own decision, and that's what we live with. You know, everyone makes their own decision, and that's it. That's just the way it goes.
Dennis, I've always said, and Earl and I have gone back and forth on this, that I would like boxing better if they had a scoreboard, and after every round, you saw how that round had been scored, instead of waiting until the end, and then just finding out what happened in round three.
Yeah, I think that's an idea I've heard chopped up a little bit over the years. I think the explanation has always been tradition. It's kind of like this is the way we always do it. We don't want the scoreboard up there. We want to keep the sport pure from a traditional on a traditional basis. But I don't see why you wouldn't do that, Jack. The thing I don't want to see is where you have these machines or Olympic-type scoring coming through the road. I mean, you've seen
punch
some
counters.
Ridiculous decisions there. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to, the intangibles matter, like the velocity of the punch, the accuracy of the punch, the damage that the punch does, the angle that the puncher threw it from, because maybe he threw it in a way that he countered the punch or evaded the punch while he landed his. There's a lot of things that go into boxing that are more of an art than a science, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to judging the fight. Now, Earl is a judge. But, but Jack, I saw Earl leave the ring one night with a bunch of 20s fall out of his pocket. So I don't know if he's that right.
So that's why he does that. Okay.
Yeah, Earl gets his hustle on.
Not that quite, but.
Okay, all right. I won't tell about the other times I saw you, but I know that one time. All right, Earl. Well, I guess this is it, huh? Coming down to the final stretch. You know, I've been 1 o'clock, or I remember one time you went from like 2 to 3:20, something like that.
Yeah.
But this has been part of my life as an adult every day since I almost since I came to Lansing. I think you started in 85 and I moved here in 83.
Yeah.
And traveling or local, I've always made it a point to try to listened to your show, and I've enjoyed it over the years, and it's going to be a major change for me, too, when you finally leave the scene. So I regret it, but I'm happy for you, man, and wish you all the best. You know that.
Thank you, my friend. Good talking with you. And we'll get together and talk some more boxing. We'll leave Jack out of the conversation.
Well, you know, Jack loves to watch fights now, Earl. I get checked from Jack fight nights, and he's asking what's going on. So he has some kind of interest. So, maybe you've been a good influence on him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I can't get a straight opinion out of Earl on these fights, so I have to text Dennis and find out what's going on here.
Yeah, well, if you shot Earl at FedEx or did a wire transfer, he'd probably
give you
an opinion. He's a judge. That's how judges do.
Well, okay, thanks a lot, Dennis. Yep. Okay, bye-bye. The time is
Dennis brings up a good point, though, mm-hmm. about the talent at Michigan State. And I think, you know, he's right. People do forget mm-hmm. that this is in terms of recruiting profiles. One of the most high-profile teams that Tom Izzo has had. The thing is, most people didn't expect Brandon Dawson
right.
to come back and play that way after that injury in March.
Right.
And Adrian Payne had not played the way he's playing now his first 2 years, so he's become a better player. So some guys have emerged. Keith Appling, obviously, being Mr. Basketball, was a terrific high school player, but he's taken on a new role, some new responsibilities. So you're right. The talent is definitely there, and it's a matter of putting it all together. And sometimes that's a puzzle. It takes a little while.
It does. And that's the thing with sports. So many people, as we've talked about, you know, so a lot of people just don't really understand how it goes. I mean, we know that it just takes time for guys to learn the game and adjust to the game. It just takes a lot of time. A lot of people want games to be played well and quickly at a very fast pace. They think they should know it right away, but we know that they don't. It just takes time, and it always takes time for young guys to learn the game better and to make it a more important part of their game. And so we understand that, but a lot of people, unfortunately, they just don't understand how much it takes. It takes a lot of, I mean, when we're sitting at practices and watching guys going over the same things again and again, and people will wonder why. Well, why did they do that? Well, if you ever had a practice, you'll know that guys take time. They're just trying to learn the game, and it's a simple function, as we say. It's a simple function to learn the game, but it takes time, and that's all it is. It just takes a lot of time to learn right. to play a game.
And we are seeing a lot of freshmen now who are mm-hmm. making a splash early. Certainly Indiana has a freshman point guard who's come in, played a very important role. Yogi Ferrell, you look at Michigan, and they've got Glenn Robinson III and Nick Stauskas starting at Michigan State. Gary Harris starting. Denzel Valentine has started most of the year. But people who remember Denzel the last couple years at Sexton remember that he could do just about anything he wanted on the court.
Right.
Now, those passes aren't all there. The game is at a little different speed. Defenders are a little bit better. And so it isn't quite as easy as it was. Actually, Denzel has been better in some ways, and I thought he would be. I thought he's been a better defender, mm-hmm. a better rebounder, and a little bit better shooter from the outside. But the passes, the things that everyone associated with him, those passing lanes have been clogged, and he's had a lot of turnovers. So he's going to have to make that adjustment, and it's just time, as you say, Earl. By the time he's a junior, he's going to be a much different player.
Exactly. And by the time he's a senior, he'll be a good player, and you'll be wishing and hoping, or as we hear a lot of people saying, man, if he only had one more year.
Right. That redshirt year would have come in handy.
Yeah, that redshirt year would have come in handy. But as we know, players don't want a redshirt. They never do. They like to just come in and play right away, and that's understandable. But, you know, that's the thing. A lot of guys come in and just like to play right away. They all want to play. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody wants to play the game, and we understand that. It makes them, hopefully makes them, a better player. A lot of guys I've talked to after the season is over, when they've left early, they've regretted taking that extra year of being that extra year. So that happens. That happens a lot to a lot of players. They'll regret doing that extra year.
You know, you can get away with that sometimes in football, Earl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can.
Because of the difference in strength and size. And if you're 17, you're playing against 22-year-olds. So, you know, there are players who want to play right away, but a lot of them will accept redshirting. Not too many of the top players are willing to redshirt in basketball. And if you're even around for your junior or senior years, people start to wonder what's wrong with you. So you don't find very many players come in like a Morris Peterson and hang around for 5 years.
Yeah. And he didn't. It really helped him. I mean, he played, what, for 11 years in the NBA?
Yeah.
So he made the smart move on staying and playing and improving his game. A lot of guys just don't see how their game will improve with one more year. But it improved a lot.
Well, he was an interesting guy, Earl, as you know. Being a Flintstone, he was kind of lost in the shuffle. Everyone was talking about Antonio Smith, and of course Mateen was a year behind, and then Charlie Bell, but not a lot of people were talking about Morris Peterson when he got here. And the first year, he had no idea what college life was about. He didn't think classes were that important. He couldn't have found a library with the GPS. So Izzo left him home from Hawaii. He said, I'm not even going to take you on this trip. And he spent that first year just watching and learning. And he really didn't become a great player until his third year when he had the broken wrist. And that was really a key for him. It taught him that he had to play defense, that he had to play a complete game. You know, Izzo used to say that he was still looking for the first guy on campus that Morris Peterson could guard. And I think it took 3 years before they found him.
Hey, Jack, it's Aaron. A quick question for you. Do you think, kind of changing the sort of the topic here a little bit, but do you think technology has changed college sports at all? For example, you know, film is a lot easier to access with HD cameras and easier to edit, social media, the internet in general. I mean, do you think this has had any effect on college sports in general?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think that the breakdowns now, everything is so instantaneous. You know, you see guys on the bench looking at replays. You see coaches on the way home. They've already broken down the game film. It's really speeded up the process. But the technology, you know, that's the kind of world we live in right now. So you have to adjust to the times, and I think it's made sports better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And maybe that ties into what you and Earl were talking about earlier as to, you know, we're seeing more freshmen understand the game a lot quicker. I mean, to me, that might have a play with technology because, like you just said, they're able to sort of break down a game instantly on the bus ride home.
Yeah, I think the other thing, you really notice the experience and the exposure that these guys have gotten against the best players in the country and the best players in the world. At a very young age. It used to be that you played high school football and high school basketball, and then you played baseball or you ran track or something in the spring. Now these guys are playing 12 months a year, traveling all over the country on the AAU circuit, playing international ball. And you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to that, no question. But in terms of your development as a player, these guys have played against the best when they're 15, 16, 17 years old. So they get into college and they don't have that same adjustment period.
Yes, the time now is 20 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, with Lawrence Wright, author of the new book, Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Wright won a Pulitzer for his book, The Looming Tower, about the history of Al-Qaeda. Throughout his career, he's written about the impact of religion on people's lives. Join us.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today will be mostly sunny, and we're expecting a high in the upper teens. Mostly cloudy, with a good chance of snow tonight, the low 5 above. Tomorrow, look for 1 to 3 inches of snow with a high in the low 20s. Saturday, the high will be in the mid-20s with a chance of some flurries. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Jack, I was thinking of when we were talking about those different sports, he asked a good question on how much changed. It really has changed a lot. I mean, all the things that we have to learn now and all the things that are done in sports now, it's really changed the game. And one thing I know from just talking with coaches, and I think you've talked the same thing with coaches, how much the game has changed. The game has changed so much by guys coaching and talking the different various of coaching games. And a lot of that has changed so much. It's sort of disappointing to me that, they've got to learn, and they've got to learn all these different things and teach all these different things. And you just don't learn the game anymore.
Well, I think the game has changed significantly, but that's just kind of progress, I think. And in some cases, you wonder if it might have been a little better in some ways in the old days. But look how our jobs have changed, Earl. I mean, Remember, you used to carry that big tape recorder around, and the studio you were in was a lot different than the one you are now. Certainly, with the access to instant information, you're sitting there during the game, and you're tweeting on one hand, and you've got stats off, checking out all the other games. It used to be, you would just sit and watch the game.
Yeah,
it's really not like that anymore. You've got so many streams of information coming at you, and it's just the fast-paced society we live in.
And people want the information instantaneously, and that's our job. We have to give it to them instantaneously. Now, of course, sometimes we do it right, and sometimes we don't. But that's the nature of the game.
Right, absolutely. I remember when I started out, we used typewriters.
Yeah.
It's really going to make me sound like a dinosaur. But, some people in the media have used them a lot later than that. But we got away from typewriters back when I started in the business in the early 80s. And then I remember one time going to cover a Tigers game, and the computer I had was like a small television set. And you had to carry this thing up the press box elevator at Tiger Stadium went out. And so you wind up climbing up to the top carrying this television set. But it was a very different world in those days. And in terms of sports, all the changes, the rules that have changed, the strategy that's changed, even the number of teams that have changed.
So many teams,
It used to be that people could tell you every player on every team. Now you don't find that as much, and it's a little different. Talking to Neil Koepke about the National Hockey League, remembering the days when they had the original six, and then they had the first wave of expansion, and now, if you don't have 30 teams in the league, you don't have much of a league.
Yeah, that's true. And we see in a lot of that. I mean, it's been so much changes, and hopefully. I don't know if it'll be more changes, but it seems like 30 teams is about the max, that it has. And I can't see it being expanding anymore.
Yeah, well, I think maybe the Lions would hope that it expands to about 50 teams, so they'd have a better chance to be in the first division.
Okay, well, we got some callers here. Let's go to the phones. Hello, you're on the air with us. Hello, you're on the air. Yep.
This is Terry. How you doing?
Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Okay. Hey, talking about change and progress and transformation and evolution, between the two of you, what changes have happened that you would have thought never could have? What would you have said, no way, and it happened? I've commented that a headline, Paterno fired amid sex scandal, would have been impossible for my mind to comprehend.
Right.
Within the game or within how the game is covered or how it's sociologically perceived, what's been the biggest changes that you would have thought couldn't have happened?
Well, I was always a guy who loved defense, and the way it's changed now, where you just don't see the defense that you used to see, that's sort of disappointing. But I know it had to change. It had to make the game safer, and the game is safer now, and that's better for the game. But boy, I used to love those big hellacious hits, and we don't get those anymore.
You know, from a sociological standpoint, and Terry asked a great question. I would have said the first thing was Joe Paterno would never have a statue taken down in front of Beaver Stadium.
Or Halo taken off the mural.
But a couple of things sociologically, I would say that I never saw the opportunity for a women's basketball game to draw 12,000-13,000 people, or to average what they do now over at Breslin Center. I think that is certainly a sign of a change in our society. And you remember, Earl, when we talked about black quarterbacks? We used to call them the black quarterbacks.
Yep.
Now they're just quarterbacks. And now the style of play has changed, that mobility is so important at that position that we don't think of those kinds of barriers. They don't exist anymore. So I think those are big changes for the better.
Okay. What barriers exist today that you think will never change, but 20 years from now they could? Are there any such barriers that could come down?
Barriers that will never change.
Yeah.
You know, I think that despite the new emphasis on replay, we're seeing more replays, and sometimes it's exasperating to see all the stoppages and delays in the game. I don't think we're ever going to totally lose the human element. You just have... balls and strike calls. I don't see it going the way of tennis with an eye in the sky. I don't see that basketball officiating is going to be done by a computer the way that Dennis talked about the boxing punch counts. I think you're still going to have people involved with the game. That's part of the great uncertainty. That's what makes it so unpredictable.
Right.
Technology is something you can't predict. I mean, what if there was a perfect technology for calling balls and strikes?
Fred Heumann said that he's the only perfect technology.
We knew that a long time ago. How about the mid-range jump shot? Will that ever come back?
I think that could come back depending on what they would do with the three-point line.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I think that there's a place for that, and what you do with the circle under the basket.
Right.
It makes that play where you drive all the way, put your head down, and go to the basket. It makes you think twice about that. So I think that, you see coaches tell point guards when they're on a fast break, on a 3-on-2 break, what do they want you to do? They want you to pull up at the free throw line, and you've got a 15-foot jumper. So I think that there is a place for that in the game, and I think you're going to see more people go back to teaching that element.
Yes. Beautiful. I'm glad to hear that. And thank you for your collective and individual wisdom.
Thank you, Terry.
Yeah, Jack, that's something that we've seen and we've talked about over the years. That could come back one day. I'm not sure if it ever will come back, but it could. That's a possibility. That's one thing that could come back.
You know what's not going to come back, Earl?
What?
Our hair.
Yeah, that's true.
That's gone forever.
Yeah, it is. That's gone. So, we just won't have to worry about that, though. That's one thing that's less to worry about.
You know, I've lost a little bit of hair up on top, as you always remind me. But I don't think that your listeners have seen all those pictures of you with the afro. I think that that's something that we definitely got to get that out there on the website.
Well, I don't know if we need to get that out on the website, but no need to embarrass folks or embarrass me, that is.
You were the inspiration for Oscar Gamble at one point.
Oscar Gamble had a big fro, that's for sure.
Dr. J.
Yeah, Dr. J had a big one, and there were some big ones out there. A Gervin, I used to like Gervin's fro. Gervin was George Gervin, he just had a fantastic throw, and the way he shot, I mean, I don't recall many people, if any, really that shot underhanded like he did all the time.
Yeah, he had that finger roll. He'd go to the basket and scoop that ball up there and just had a way of getting it to the basket without getting it blocked.
He was. I mean, there are guys. I saw him shoot one over Wilt Chamberlain. I thought I'd never see that, and he just finger rolled it over Wilt Chamberlain. He would do that from time to time, but he was just a great, great shooter.
You know who was a huge George Gervin fan was Steve Smith.
Oh.
In fact, he has George Gervin's shoes from NBA All-Star Game. And autographed by George Gervin, and was one of his idols growing up in Detroit.
Can't blame him. George was such a great shooter. He was just a special player, and a lot of people. We know a lot of people are special to so many people, and we don't get the chance to hear them as much as they do as they philosophize about them. But boy, we've heard a lot of great stories about great players in the NBA.
You know, someone was telling me they saw a parallel between George Gervin and Kevin Durant, being tall and very thin and being able to get to the basket, but shooting outside, being a prolific scorer, and defense was kind of an afterthought with George Gervin.
Yeah, it was, and for a lot of players, it was sort of like an afterthought. And yes, even though it's emphasized a lot more, that's one thing we should say. Defense has been emphasized so much more in the NBA. I mean, it used to didn't be that way, but now if you're going to play in the NBA today, you're going to have to play some defense, and you're going to have to get on your horse and just play hard-nosed defense, which is good, which I think most guys should do. But that's something.
Do you enjoy watching that kind of game? Do you like to watch an 82-79 game in the NBA?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I've always liked watching those kind of games.
Well, you can relate to that because you were never a good shooter, so you can understand that.
That's okay. I don't have to be a good shooter to appreciate good basketball. No, we've seen some good games, and you know, as you know, I never really understood hockey. I like the game. I've always liked hockey and the way it's played. It's such a fast game. It's such a fast-moving game, and it's a great game. But, boy, if you don't understand it, it does make it hard. I remember one time, and he sort of laughed at me a little bit because this was when I first came here to Michigan State. And so I was over in the ice rink the first time, and I asked him, I said, how do guys make their changes and get off the track? And of course, the coach just laughed at me a little bit, which understandably he should have. He said, "Oh, it have we do it." I said, "Well, how do you know when to change shifts and change gears and all that?"
Right. Well, you know, there are nuances to the sport, and obviously you see the line changes and guys coming over the boards, in threes. But when you talk about some of the subtle aspects of sport, I don't really appreciate the nuances of soccer.
Yeah.
And, I'll sit there and watch a game, and to me, it's not that enthralling. But to a lot of people who really appreciate it, you know, I talked to Steve Grinzel about it, and, they talk about the beautiful game, but to me, it's not as compelling as some other sports. And you talk to someone like Neil Koepke or someone who really appreciates the fine points of hockey, and they break down a power play at three levels beyond what you and I see.
Yes, that's for sure. We don't understand it as quite as well as they do. That's for sure. I mean, I like the sport, and I think it's a very enjoyable sport. But boy, it just takes a bit of to learn, and it takes a bit to watch and to understand it. And
well,
that's
you never played hockey, right? I mean, that's not a sport like basketball or baseball.
Right.
You played all the time growing up, and
yep.
so
you know, that's got to be an adjustment too.
Mm-hmm. It does. It is. We played sports, you know, baseball, football, basketball, those three sports primarily as kids growing up. And that's what, you know, you when you're a kid, you always play the sports you like. And that's still, that's one thing I guess we can say it will never change. People play the sports they like.
Yeah, and I think you find, too, that that has changed a little bit in terms of baseball from the youth level. When we had Jake Boss Jr. on the show the other day talking about that, you know, in baseball, it takes more players, and it's more of an organized sport. Now, when we were growing up, you know, you put your glove on your handlebars, your bike, and you'd go down to the park, and you'd be down there all day. But you could even find games with four players. You'd find ways to do things, and now it seems like everything is a team basis. If you don't have 15, 20 guys, it's almost impossible to play.
Well, we got a special. I mean, I think someone has planted a question into our next guest. Alex has asked me to ask you, how is the book doing?
Book is doing very well, thank you. We just have a few hundred copies left. We're talking about Heart of a Spartan.
Heart of a Spartan.
And it's still available. You can go online to heartofaspartanbook.com, or you can get it at Schuler, Barnes & Noble, Meijer. It's at all area stores, and we had a lot of success with it. That was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, that was a good book. I mean, it was one of the probably the best book you've written, would you say?
Well, I'm waiting to do the Earl Robinson story.
Well, that won't sell anything. So,
speaking of the Robinson story, I want to let some of the listeners know who may not have seen the teaser yet. The Jackie Robinson story called 42 is going to be released this spring, and very excited to see that. Looking at the trailers for it, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Harrison Ford plays Branch Rickey.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's going to be a very successful film.
Well, should be a good one. I know there's been a lot of films out there, and that should be one good one. As we know, Jackie Robinson was a great player, and he had to. I mean, that's the thing. He had to take a lot to become that great player. I mean, he was a great player. Did a lot of great things. But unfortunately, you know, there were other players that were probably a lot better players at that time, a lot better players than Jackie Robinson. But he ended up being the one because Branch Rickey chose him because he knew he could take the punches and a lot of the grief, and it worked for him, and he just became a good player and served the players well. And this, and a lot of players didn't like him because of that, but he became a very, very good player, one of the best players ever.
Earl, a lot of people know that you are a big Dodgers fan and a big National League fan, but was part of that because of your uncle, Jackie?
Yeah, I would say that. Wasn't the uncle, but yes, he was a very favorite player, Jackie Robinson was, as he was with a lot of black players when they were growing up, when they were young. He was just a favorite for everyone. Well, Jack, hey, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and we'll have you back again sometime.
All right, look forward to next week, girl.
Okay, we'll talk to you then. Hey, we want to let you know you've been listening to radio station WKAR in East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoon. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. We'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.